Americans are increasingly at home with the idea of legalizing pot, or at least decriminalizing it, which is actually not quite the same thing. We'll get into that later. Over the last several years, survey after survey has charted a seismic shift in popular opinion toward marijuana, and as many as two-thirds of us now live in states where some form of pot is legal, from tightly regulated medical uses to full-on adult recreational consumption. So what's behind this wave of pot acceptance, and what does it mean for the public health of our nation? We're going to talk about those things this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. Good afternoon. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen today. My guest is Joseph Palomar, Assistant Professor of Population Health at New York University. He recently wrote a piece titled, Not Just for Potheads, A Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. Good afternoon, Professor, and welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thanks for having me.
So various polls over the last couple of years have been showing a significant shift toward a better opinion of legalizing marijuana for either medical or recreational use. You have conducted your own study into this. Talk about your research and what you found.
Okay, so within the last year, I've co-authored a couple of different peer-reviewed manuscripts about legalization, but with regard to high school seniors. I've been analyzing a national data set from the Monitoring the Future study. It's an annual, very large-scale, nationally representative survey of high school seniors throughout the U.S. So I've been looking at how their opinions of marijuana legalization relate to sociodemographics and their own marijuana use and so on. So I want to see basically who was supporting which particular laws and so on.
Okay, so that particular demographic set, one would expect a pretty significant support for legalizing pot. What did you find?
Well, actually, the high school seniors are probably a little bit more liberal-minded than what we see in the adult national surveys. I've been analyzing, well, not analyzing, but keeping up to date with the latest Gallup polls and the Pew Forum polls. And currently, a little over 50% of adults in the U.S. support full legalization, not decriminalization, but actual legalization. So that's a slim majority right now. High school seniors, I found in my analyses that about two-thirds support it either being legal or a violation. So a third support full legalization, but liberal laws altogether collapsed together account for about two-thirds. So most of them favor some form of liberal policy.
So is this change just being driven by the fact that our aging population is, to put it politely, moving off the stage and a younger generation is coming up that has a different attitude, or is there something else at work here?
That's a great point, and I agree with it. I think the younger generation, a.k.a. the millennials, are driving a lot of the support for legalization. A lot of the 18-year-olds, 21-year-olds strongly support legalization or at least more liberal policies. When I look at some national results from the Pew Forum, I'm looking at them right now, and I see the silent generation, the people who were born before 1945, only about 30% support legalization compared to roughly 70% of millennials. So the younger the generation, the more likely they are to be more liberal-minded and perhaps support legalization. So there's definitely an age or cohort association going on there.
I guess one other trend, if we look at societal trends, and obviously there have been a lot of them, but one other big one has been a shift in attitude toward, for example, gay marriage. And those things seem to have come along on almost the same track. Would some of the same social forces, do you think, be moving us in that direction at the same time we're rethinking our positions on marijuana?
Yeah, I think that's another great point. I think that people are just saying, mind your own business. As long as you're not affecting me, then I'm all for it. Whether it's gay marriage, smoking marijuana, all these social issues seem to be somewhat interrelated.
Mm-hmm. The use, though, of marijuana might seem to be maybe a different issue than gay marriage from the standpoint of public health, which is your particular field. So the shift in attitudes, what implications do you see in this for public health, both the short term and long term?
Let's see. Well, very commonly we focus on, you know, if we were to hear a public service announcement about marijuana, they would largely focus on certain adverse effects, like adverse effects on memory, IQ, things we read about every day. But I think that one of the most important potential adverse effects that we usually don't hear about that often is arrest. I think compared to a lot of the other things that we hear about, arrest could be one of the most harmful or damaging adverse outcomes that could result from marijuana use or possession. If you get arrested for merely possessing marijuana, I mean, there's a chance that you won't be able to get a job. You probably won't be able to get school loans. Those who get caught with marijuana tend to need loans for school more than other people, or Pell Grants. So all these different things could really affect your life. So, and also being arrested or sentenced isn't the most pleasant thing either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, marijuana could be bad for you physically. I mean, there's a ton of research, but we have to keep in mind also that the legal effects of being arrested and sentenced are also pretty bad things that could happen related to marijuana use.
Well, and that itself, the fact that we have the world's largest percentage of the public incarcerated here in the United States, and I'm trying to remember where I read this, but I believe the statistic is something like better than 2/3 of those in prison today are there for nonviolent drug-related crimes. There's got to be some public health implications to that much incarceration, and what happens to these people when they get out.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not you're actually incarcerated, I mean, just an arrest within itself could lead to very poor public health outcomes. And if you're in prison for a year or two, that could have a very bad effect on your mm-hmm. life and your social life for the rest of your life. So it isn't good at all. I think we need to start researching different ways of going about this.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to join our discussion. We're talking about the trend in public opinion polls showing that Americans now, a majority of Americans, and if you pick the right demographic group, a very clear majority of Americans, favor the legalization of the use of marijuana, not just for medicinal purposes, but just flat out, let's make it legal. And more Americans now support it than ever before, clearly more than half of all Americans. And again, with some demographic groups, that support is quite a bit higher. And this isn't just one study. There are numerous Gallup polls, Pew Research, various news outlets have done this polling over the last few years, a big shift in attitude. We've also seen some ballot measures across the country have a great deal of success in changing local and state laws, and it looks like we're probably going to be getting more of that. What do you think about all of this? What's your own position on the issue? 800-642-1234. And we're not only talking about public opinion and who's supporting marijuana legalization and who isn't, but we've also been discussing what are the public health implications of this change in attitude? What would happen if we did say, okay, you know what, we're going to treat pot like alcohol, and you know, we're going to all mind our own business. If you want to smoke a joint and you don't do anything to affect me, well, go right ahead. More of us apparently are taking that viewpoint. Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Or post a comment or question on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. John Munson in for Kathleen today. My guest is Joseph Palomar, Assistant Professor of Population Health at New York University. So, Professor, the title of your article that was the genesis for this show is Not Just Potheads, a Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. One of the things that you talk about in your article is the fact that even people, there's significant support, not majority support, but significant support for legalizing marijuana use, even among people who don't use it. Where does that come from?
Where do the statistics?
I mean, why would somebody who doesn't use marijuana say, yeah, let's legalize it?
Oh, I mean, there could be any reason. I mean, first of all, people are exposed to people who smoke marijuana. I mean, it's hard to not know someone who has ever, most people whether or not you've used it, know people who have used it. But, I mean, you could be strongly against any unhealthy behavior, but it doesn't mean that you feel it has to be illegal. We could be against any sort of illegal behavior. But it could also be based on things like liberty, possibly the thought of preventing people from using it who are underage, because if you think about the alcohol model, you're technically supposed to be under 21 to use it. So, I mean, if it were truly legalized, it would be strictly regulated, and it would be harder for youngsters to get.
Not just regulated, but taxed as well, which is what some people have been looking at as another source of revenue for government operations.
Mm-hmm.
So plenty of reasons to support this from the standpoint of liberty and minding your own business and that kind of thing, possibly a way to put more money in the treasury and so forth, maybe save some money in law enforcement.
Eliminating arrests. I mean, mm-hmm. not just law enforcement, but the arrests. I mean, that costs a lot of money, the sentencing, all of that. And also eliminating black markets and associated corruption and harm and so on. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons, because a lot of people think that, marijuana is in fact associated with the use of quote-unquote harder drugs. But I think that has a lot to do with overlapping black markets. So, for example, if you or I went to Colorado today to buy marijuana and it was on the shelf at some store, I mean, I wouldn't. But if we were to, we would not see heroin or cocaine on the shelf next to it. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a dealer on the street, there's a good chance they might be carrying something else, like ecstasy or some other drug. So it's, in many respects, overlapping black markets. So another goal of legalization would be to try and separate the markets so that marijuana use, if you do reject abstinence, will hopefully not lead to use of quote-unquote harder drugs.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234 is the phone number to join us. We've got callers, and we'll be taking calls in just a moment. If you get a busy signal, feel free to send an email to talk@wpr.org or leave a Facebook comment at the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I trust that many of our listeners will be wanting to chime in on this topic, Professor. What do we know about the actual results of this shift in public opinion? I mean, we've seen a number of ballot initiatives that were successful. We're seeing laws changing in cities and states. At the federal level, however, marijuana is still what's called a Class 1 controlled substance. And although the Obama administration had sort of signaled they weren't going to do anything about what, for example, happened in Colorado, there are still people who grow medical marijuana being arrested and tried in federal court. There's quite a bit of ambivalence in the legal system about how all these state laws jive with the federal law. What is it going to take to make the kinds of changes that people seem to want take effect nationally, do you think?
It's extremely complex, as you mentioned. So right now, it's recreational use is legal in four states, plus the District of Columbia, and it is also decriminalized, or medical use is allowed in at least another 20 additional states. So a lot of states have liberal laws in some form or another, but it is illegal internationally. So I don't think there's a good chance of it ever becoming legal at the national level, because we'd be breaking an international law. Because this has been going on for over 40 years, that it's illegal in way over 100 countries. And if we made it legal at the national level, we'd be violating international law and going against everything else. So.
Mm-hmm.
But
there
really
are countries in the world. There are countries in the world where marijuana use is legal, aren't there?
No. It's most legal in the U.S. out of everywhere in the world.
Oh, okay. I thought that there was Holland or somebody had changed their laws to make them more liberal.
No, in the Netherlands, it's decriminalized, I believe strictly within the coffee shop system, but it is illegal. They have a loophole. So okay. They're allowed to, quote unquote, allowed to sell it in the coffee shops. I believe you have to be in the coffee shop when you use it.
The difference between decriminalized and legal is where lawyers live. I get that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have some phone calls and more questions for our guest. We're talking about the fact that more of us than ever before support the legalization of the use of marijuana. What does that mean for our society? What does it mean about where we're headed? What are the implications? And what are the public health issues that surround this change? What are the demographic shifts and all of those things? That's all grist for the discussion mill here in the Kathleen Dunn program today. My guest, Joseph Palomar, assistant professor of population health at New York University. He just recently wrote and published a piece called Not Just for Potheads, A Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. Where do you stand on this? Do you support the legalization of pot? What do you make of the recent nationwide movement for legalization? Maybe you don't support legalization of marijuana. What are your concerns? And what do you think public support for marijuana, or why do you think public support for marijuana use is growing? 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. All great ways to get in touch. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kathleen today. My guest this hour, Joseph Palomar, assistant professor of population health at New York University. He recently wrote a piece called Not Just for Potheads, A Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. We've been looking at where the support's coming from and some of the public health concerns. Either way, I want to know what you think. So we've got full phones. Let's go to a call right now. We'll start in Gurnee, Illinois, where Anita is on the line. Anita, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm so happy for this opportunity for this discussion today because I'm in my 60s. I remember the 60s. I remember the 70s. And I had seen on television, and I actually then bought it because I thought it was such a brilliant documentary by Michael Pollan called The Botany of Desire. And one of the four products of produce that he cites the history of and brings us into the present on was cannabis. And the big point was that, you know, we look back on the times of the 60s and 70s, and I'm afraid that a lot of the nation is doing that as there's all rah-rah to legalize this. They're thinking, you know, these people, maybe they're not smoking it anymore. They're responsible citizens and parents, and they look back on it as something quite tame. But in Pollan's documentary, it's quite clear that the growers are, you know, as they say in the documentary, they're sexing it up. They have the lights on 24/7. They produce and produce constantly. And some of it is laced with chemicals so that when you are purchasing that marijuana now, you may think back nostalgically to the tame stuff that you imbibed in the 60s and 70s, and what you're getting now may well not be that. During all this discussion to make it legal, I get the pros on that, but I don't hear anyone talking about this. Does America know about the difference between the marijuana product back then and what they well may be getting now and how to avoid that hazard?
Anita, great question. Professor, that's a very clear public health question, and there have been a lot of stories about pot being laced with a number of other types of much harder drugs. What's your take on this, particularly from the public health aspect of what kind of marijuana would be available if it was suddenly legal?
Yeah, well, legalization would technically lead to regulation, and hopefully the THC and other components would be able to be looked after. I mean, she makes a great point because the THC content does appear to be increasing since the 60s. And so, therefore, it's much stronger. So, I mean, it would have to be strongly regulated to ensure that only certain percentages of THC are available in whatever product they're selling. But the additives, other chemicals, I mean, that's another major problem with any drug. It's less common with marijuana, more so with drugs like cocaine and ecstasy. But regulation would hopefully weed out those batches or those people selling the tainted versions of marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And of course, growing your own would make that concern go away, and a lot of people would be looking forward to being able to cultivate their own cannabis.
Yeah, that's true. But also with regard to adulterants, there's something called synthetic marijuana that is kind of a national problem right now. Synthetic weed, commonly called Spice and K2, those are the two big versions of it. You could buy it online or in some convenience stores. Most strains are technically illegal, but this is stuff that looks like marijuana. It comes in pretty packaging. It's sprayed with research chemicals, and it works like marijuana, but it's a lot stronger, and it's a lot of people are winding up in the hospital. There are bad batches going around. Some people are just not reacting well to any of it, and this is a big problem. And every time they ban a new strain of synthetic weed, a new strain comes out a month later. So there are hundreds of new versions of synthetic marijuana coming around, replacing natural marijuana.
And I want to get to something, another point that Anita made, which was that, and I don't mean to put words in her mouth, but this is kind of what she was getting at. You know, how much romanticization, are we romanticizing the weed of the 60s and the 70s? And thinking that that's what we're getting today, how much of that is going on, do you think?
I think it's largely about social context. I mean, the 60s were a crazy time. People were coming out, changing, going against society, and marijuana was also not only associated with that, but it was an indicator of that. I mean, a way to rebel against society back then was smoking marijuana. If you want to rebel against society today, marijuana is not really the way, because the people who haven't used marijuana are actually in the minority. So, I mean, it has a lot to do with social context.
Mm-hmm. Anita, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Milwaukee next, and Philip is waiting to be on the air. Philip, go ahead.
Yes, I'm one of the exceptions to the assertion about the silent generation. I was at the University of Illinois in 68-69, and toward the year 2000 paper, I indicated that pot would be legal and tobacco would be illegal. Now, I've never tried pot, but I would like to try a brownie. In addition to that, I'm wondering why they do not legalize hemp, because ultimately I think it would be very good for the environment. Obviously, I was wrong on both my counts. Do you think tobacco will ever be illegal?
Philip, thanks for the call. Philip, while he was in college, was predicting that pot would be legal and tobacco illegal by the year 2000. Neither one of those two things happened. But what about it? Do you think we'll ever outlaw the use of tobacco?
I don't think so. I personally think marijuana will always be illegal at the national level, and I have a strong feeling that tobacco will always remain legal. But people have been predicting that in books and in articles since the late 60s, early 70s, and no, it hasn't happened, and I honestly don't think it will.
Mm-hmm. And, Philip, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Joe in Oshkosh next. Joe, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I agree that regulation is a key part of this. I think as far as regulation goes, I think one of the most important aspects regarding impact on populations is the issue of advertising. And I'd like your guest to address that, how he feels, whether that would actually be, and I'm talking about no advertising. I think that's really the key, is that there shouldn't be any advertising whatsoever. You know, that's the big problem with tobacco and a big problem with alcohol as well. But, of course, as soon as something is legalized, then you have this the door open, so to speak, to possible advertising. So I'm wondering if it's actually better to leave it as decriminalized and therefore have maybe more of a constitutional argument against advertising versus legalizing it and then having all these arguments or the pressure put on because it's legal product, therefore we have the right to advertise it.
Yeah. Joe, thanks so much for that call. I really appreciate getting that point of view here, because that's one of the questions that I wanted to raise, not specifically about advertising, but if we legalize marijuana, how long is it before, instead of big tobacco, we have big pot with major corporations engaging in large-scale growing and marketing and so forth, and certainly there'd be some public health implications from that. Professor?
Yeah, I agree that we don't want it to become the next Marlboro. I read that someone wrote that in an article, I think, last week. We would have to strictly regulate advertising and everything like that. We have to learn from our mistakes with tobacco and cigarettes, and we can't let the same thing happen with marijuana. But, you know, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is, you know, do you want to continue arresting a ton of people or not? Or do you want to be able to implement effective prevention in light of legality? So it requires strict regulation. I mean, that's really it.
Mm-hmm. Joe, thanks so much for that call. There's a line available for you if you'd care to join us right now at 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about the trend in public opinion, which has seen a major shift over the last few years toward favoring legalizing marijuana use. And Americans increasingly at home with the idea of not just decriminalizing pot, but legalizing it. And many of us live in states where at least medical marijuana has already been made legal, and there are some states where recreational use has also been approved. Again, a major shift in public opinion, some of it having to do with demographics, some of it may having to do with more and more people just thinking, you know what somebody else does in the privacy of their home is really up to them. And we're talking about that with Joseph Palomar, Assistant Professor of Population Health at New York University, and with you at 800-642-1234. You can also reach us via email, talk@WPR.org, and look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page and leave a comment there. We've had several listeners, Professor, point out that Uruguay and Portugal have legalized pot. So we wouldn't necessarily be the only country to do it, but we would certainly be the biggest if we did.
No, they actually decriminalized, I believe, all drugs. So it's not legalization. A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, but they're not the same thing.
Decriminalized. Well, let's talk about what they mean then. If you decriminalize pot, what is it we would be doing if we said, well, we're going to decriminalize marijuana?
It would depend on the state or the country or the city, but generally it means that it is still illegal, but they're not really going to arrest you if you're caught possessing at least small amounts. If you're selling it, you would probably be under arrest.
It's illegal to sell, but if you're using it, we're going to look the other way. Is that sort of what we'd be saying?
Generally, at least if you're only possessing small amounts. You know.
Okay. All right. Actually a very important legal distinction. Let's go to the phones again, and this time it's Ralph in Little Suamico. Ralph, good afternoon.
Yes, hi. I just thought of one other comment after you talked about that, and I'll just quickly mention that if it's illegal to sell something but it's legal to possess it, you haven't eliminated the black market. You're still mm-hmm. having an underworld that's the people that are selling it. And I think that's worse than totally legalizing it. But my point was that I smoked in my 20s and 30s like a lot of people at that time, and then I got older and I just kind of lost interest in it. But for me to say that it shouldn't be legal at this point in my life when I don't smoke it, I'm being about as hypocritical as the last three presidents that we've had, including our current president, who have all smoked pot, and still they won't stand up and say, I want to see this legal.
Yeah.
Professor?
I mean, that all depends on the public opinion, and I agree with what you said, but you know, I mean, these are people who want to remain in office, and they made it into office, and they can't all of a sudden just go against public opinion. Of course, things have changed in the last few years. But, yeah, you're right. The last two or three presidents, I believe, have admitted to smoking weed, so it could come across as hypocritical. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as we're finding in these national surveys, a lot of people have used weed and are against it, or at least want it to be illegal.
Yeah, you point that out in your article, and I found that really curious, that people who've used weed, there are people who've used weed who still think it should be illegal. Why is that? That seems like a real disconnect.
As I know, I say that I'm at least giving most of these people the benefit of the doubt that they have good intentions. That is not necessarily hypocritical, even though it may seem that way, because just like cigarette smoking, a lot of people become smokers and regret ever doing it, or they might not want their kids to do it. So if you think about marijuana in that light, I get it. But, I mean, if you're strictly against it, like, morally and not for health reasons, then it comes across as a little bit more hypocritical.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234 is the phone number to join the program. Here's a Facebook comment from Jason, who writes, I feel that marijuana should be legalized and taxed, not only to generate tax revenue, but also create jobs. Do we have a sense on what sort of impact on the economy through job creation we might find from legalization of marijuana?
I think it will probably have a big impact. I mean, I've only been reading summaries of reports in the news in the last couple of months, but I believe that marijuana is bringing a lot of money into Colorado and possibly Washington. I mean, it might be too early to tell, but it does seem like it is bringing in a lot. However, public health-wise, what we need to be concerned about, for example, are highway fatalities increasing. So I've read instances of that possibly happening. So we have to look at all angles, what's happening. We are, in fact, looking at a natural experiment occurring in real time right now. So we don't really know what is happening, because these couple of states just legalized marijuana a couple of years ago, if even. So, but it does appear that revenues are increasing, from what I read it anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right, 800-642-1234. Let's take a quick call before we go to another break. We'll start with Ron in Oshkosh this time. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm most curious in how employers are handling this. From my understanding, many still do a pre-employment or a random drug screen. Now, I know that doesn't always account for all drugs, and there's plenty of other things that employees could be doing on their off time that could be potentially negative things. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting point, because I've been reading up on this a lot too, and it depends what the employers in those states where it's legal decide to do, because in some respects, it's another way of controlling or preventing use. You might be in a state where it becomes legal, but your employer might say, we're going to drug test you every month or so, and that might prevent use. So it all depends on the company's policies and depends on the state you're in. But one thing I want to point out is that what happens is marijuana is, as harmful as it could be, it is usually relatively benign compared to other drugs like heroin and cocaine. So what happens with these quote-unquote harder drugs is that you're less likely to be detected on a drug screen if you use cocaine once a week. But if you use marijuana once every couple of weeks, that stays in your system longer, so you're actually more likely to get caught with that. So you have people using cocaine and ecstasy, and they don't get caught. And then people who smoke marijuana once in a while and do get caught and possibly fired. So you have to be really careful with the drug testing.
Well, and I would imagine there would end up being some court cases about firing someone for using a legal substance. You know, I mean, obviously, if you show up for work drunk, yes, you can be dismissed, but you can have traces of THC or the residual traces of the use of marijuana in your bloodstream for quite a while when you have no effects. Mm-hmm. It would seem that there would probably need to be some sort of change in the way employers enforce that kind of thing. But I know, for example, if you are a railroad engineer, you're one of the people who drives the trains. Man, mm-hmm. if you have a negative test, you're in big trouble.
which, you know, obviously you don't want people who are impaired driving trains. And there are probably mm-hmm. a lot of other occupations where there would be some similar safety concerns. A lot of different ways to look at this.
Definitely. But one more thing is with regard to driving. I mean, we don't want people under the influence of anything, not alcohol, not weed,
right.
while driving. And a problem is that if the THC content stays in you for so long that you might have a false positive on a test, you might get convicted of a DUI. When in reality, you smoked days ago. Mm-hmm. So I think we need better testing. I'm assuming people are working on that now, but it's just something to keep your mind on.
Sure. Well, you know, you can never do just one thing. There's always a lot of other stuff going on. What's going on right now is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have full phone lines, and we'll take as many of those calls as we can between now and 2 o'clock. As we continue to discuss the trends in public opinion that favor the legalization of marijuana. I'm wondering what you think. 800-642-1234. If you get a busy signal, you can reach us via email, talk@WPR.org, or do as Jason did earlier and leave a comment on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network, and my guest is Joseph Palomar, Assistant Professor of Population Health at New York University. We're talking about, the genesis of this program is an article that Professor Palomar wrote titled, Not Just for Potheads, A Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. As you've been looking at this, Professor, and quickly before we go back to the phones, what was the biggest surprise that you got as you've watched this whole thing unfold? What has really jumped out at you as kind of, wow, I wasn't expecting that?
Well, I think we know from national statistics that racial minorities tend to use drugs, including marijuana, at lower rates than white Caucasian people. And what we found is that if you identify as Black, African-American, you're actually much more likely to support more liberal policies, including legalization. So I think that's pretty interesting.
You're also more likely to go to jail for using pot than a more affluent white person.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. And this also corroborates national statistics. So it might have to do with legal consequences. If you're Black, you're more likely to get arrested or convicted. So it might have to do with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to John in Elgin, Illinois next. John, good afternoon.
Hi. Hi. I'm a child of the 50s. I was born, brought up in the 60s, and smoked at that time. I know it was a much milder version, but there were some strong strains, Acapulco Gold, Panama Red, to mention a couple. But you talk about hypocrisy. How many deaths have been caused by alcohol consumption? Your organs, your internal organs, the accidents that have happened, it's appalling. And marijuana has never had that effect. I worked for a major news organization, a major broadcast organization, and I've known doctors, lawyers, politicians, and smoked recreationally with them. And as the years have gone on and the strains have gotten stronger and stronger, they keep smoking, and I quit for 20 years while I raised my son because I thought I should always be available for him if there was an emergency. But since I've gotten older, I'm older in my 60s now, and I started again, and I've had the top strains, and they're wonderful. They relieve pain. I have my back is degenerating. We used to carry 2,000 pounds of equipment around the world, literally. But I just wonder about that hypocrisy about alcohol and marijuana.
Mm. What it is that alcohol is socially accepted, and it's been throughout much of the world for possibly centuries, and there's not that much that could change that. You could have very conservative people or very even religious people who will still drink or consume alcohol, and we're just most of us, all we know is marijuana being illegal. I mean, anyone who was born, 1970 or later, all you know is that it's an illegal drug and that it's quote-unquote wrong to use. So, I mean, throughout our lifetimes, we're taught, like, marijuana is bad, it's dangerous, but alcohol is acceptable. And I mean, alcohol has plenty of good uses. People use it to facilitate, you know, social situations and so on. But you made a great point. It is also associated with a lot of problems in society. I mean, car crashes, alcoholism, date rape, all sorts of things. So, I mean, it does seem a little bit hypocritical that, you know, one drug that seems more benign would be illegal, in fact, Schedule 1 in the Controlled Substances Act, and then the other is legal, if not promoted by society. So you made an interesting point.
Hey, John, thanks so much for that call. Of course, there was a period of time when alcohol was less socially acceptable, and it was politically toxic, and we had a major change in this country, and for a number of years, alcohol was illegal. Well, we saw how that worked out.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't that long before people said, "Okay, I guess we screwed up. Let's fix that." What's it going to take? I think do you think, Professor, for enough people to have an aha moment to where we realize, okay, you know what, we really need to rethink this whole thing, or have we already had it?
I think it's happening now. I think we reached the tipping point about 2 years ago when the first two states voted on legal recreational use. And we're past the tipping point and things are changing now. But again, I'm not quite sure if it'll ever be legal nationally, because internationally it's illegal.
Mm-hmm. Let's take some more phone calls. Still a lot of people want to talk about this issue. Thanks to John in Elgin, Illinois, for calling in. Let's go next to Deacon in Sheboygan. Deacon, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to make a quick comment, and I do not mean to discredit John that just called in, but, you know, if we want to be honest with ourselves, which we as Americans very seldom have the ability to do, we have to move this beyond the hypocrisy point, the medical point, the moral issue. None of that matters. If this can be proven, and it has been proven now, to be profitable to someone, and I won't be as small as to say it's the corporate problem. That's not it. It's the American way. If money can be made with this, regardless of how damaging it is, whether it is or not, I won't judge that, it will come to be. It will pass. That should be the main point of the discussion about this, because that's the main factor, not the help, not the hypocrisy, not the moral, the money. That's where America is.
Deacon, thanks for the call. So, Professor, it's all about the money. What about that?
I think it is largely about the money, but that also goes hand in hand with changing morals. We can't just look at one thing and not the other. We are finding that a lot of people nationally are considering marijuana use less of a moral issue. So that gives you more room to focus more on the monetary aspects of it. So things are changing, and there are people in all political parties. I mean, liberals are more likely to believe in legalization, but there are a pretty substantial portion of conservatives and Republicans that are starting to back legalization. I mean, we hear people like Rand Paul out there. Of course, he's more libertarian. But,
I was going to say that would be the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, because the stats that I've seen still show about 62% of Republicans oppose legalization of marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Because of either conservative values or religion, of course, those are intertwined. But things are slowly changing, and I think if certain subgroups start to focus more on, as the caller said, more monetary reasons, then I think people will start to focus more on that rather than considering it a moral issue.
Of course, some people might make money, but others, for example, the prison industry, might make less, because we'd be putting fewer people behind bars. So that group might say, well, wait a minute, we're going to lose money if this stuff becomes legal, so we'd better oppose it. There's always a financial aspect to any political discussion, I would say, these days.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lynn in Appleton next. Lynn, hello.
Yes, I'd just like to say that I smoke pot, but I do it totally for motivation.
Motivation for what?
For exercise. I get on my, it gets me on my treadmill, and I listen to TED Talks. It's, you know, it's keeping me healthy. It's helped me quit smoking. It's been nothing but good for me. And I can't see how that, you know, I could go, you know, I could be arrested for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. And, well, a big argument is that someone will say, well, you say that it's good for you, it motivates you, but there isn't a lot of research that says that. So, I mean, that's a problem that it's been very hard over the last how many decades to do actual research on physical marijuana, because if you want to show that marijuana is beneficial in some way, it's going to be very difficult to legally get your hands on it and do that clinical trial. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the evidence is going in the other direction, saying, no, it's bad for you, and that's that. That's what the evidence shows. There isn't a lot of scientific evidence showing that it motivates people. So, I mean, that's part of the problem.
Do you know of any, now that it's legal in Washington and Colorado, those two states have significant universities? Do you know of studies that have begun there on the effects of marijuana use?
No, I don't, but I should really start looking into it. That's pretty interesting. But I do know that nationally that the DEA and possibly the NIH pretty much have a handle on all legal weed. So I wonder how that applies at a state level where it's legal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there seems to me there ought to be a research grant in this for somebody. Bill in Green Bay, let's hear from you next. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm in Wisconsin, but I have good friends in Colorado. My son teaches at Arizona State, and I'm retired from the newspaper business. The thing that you're looking at, a caller had called and said, well, what are they going to do now if you get arrested? Can't you get arrested anymore? Well, you can, because it's still against federal laws.
Mm-hmm.
And employers can say, you know, it's still against the law. I don't care what Colorado says or Washington says. We're governed by federal laws as well as by state laws. The situation with colleges is that on campuses in Colorado and Washington, it still is an illegal drug. As long as that institution is taking any federal funds, the federal government has said that it is still against federal laws. So mm-hmm. they have to uphold them. Now, do they uphold them? Yeah, probably not. You know, they're writing parking tickets for people that are caught with the small amounts of marijuana. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. And what another caller had said. That they're set back by the hypocrisy. Boy, hypocrisy in government, if that's a new thing for them.
Shocking, shocking. Yeah. Bill, we get it. Thank you. A great way to conclude here. Professor, at some point, we're going to have to resolve the differences between state and federal law. Because you point out that we'd be going against international trends if we legalized marijuana. But if let's say that at some point all 50 states say, you know what, it's legal to use marijuana recreationally and the federal government still lists it as a class one controlled substance, that's going to create some enormous legal problems.
Yeah, I don't know if all 50 states will, because some are much more conservative than others.
Well, speaking hypothetically.
But I read a good point a few days ago. Someone mentioned that a Republican president might take over in a couple of years, and if he or she takes over, they might just really cut down on everything that's going on in Colorado and Washington. So things might change in a couple of years when Obama is no longer in office.
Mm-hmm. So where do you think this is going? And specifically, as you're looking at this from a public health perspective, and we only have about a minute, about 40 seconds left, actually, to talk about this. Where do you see this going next? What are you looking for as the next tick that will identify where we're headed trend-wise?
I think every year, every other year, more and more states are going to decriminalize or legalize, and we'll have to see what happens from there. But public opinion is definitely shifting and favoring it. I hope that regardless of whatever happens, that people that reject abstinence, I hope they're safe about all of their choices, and that's what I care about. I don't want anybody getting harmed from anything, legal or illegal. Yeah.
All right. Well, Professor Palomar, thank you so much for joining us this hour. Obviously, our listeners were very engaged in the topic. I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Joseph Palomar is Assistant Professor of Population Health at New York University. He wrote a piece titled, Not Just for Potheads, A Look at Who Supports Legal Marijuana. This program was produced by Cynthia Schuster, who also handled on-air production. Dave Potras was our board op. And thank you to all of them for helping make this hour of radio possible. Remember, tomorrow, No Kathleen Dunn Show, special Thanksgiving programming. You'll get to listen to some really great stuff here on the Ideas Network that is Thanksgiving-themed, and we'll talk about that coming up. After the news, we'll talk about Mark Twain. That'll be interesting. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of WPR.